This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 64 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Andy, let's start with you. Are you feeling better after you coughed?
Yeah. I made it through irrevocable glue waivers, okay. So I'm back.
Irrevocable glue waivers. I know it's cliche to say band name, so band album. That's like an album title.
A Guided by Voices record for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm not going to look it up, but I'm positive. I'll look at Mark's face.
Mark, how you doing? What do you think about Guided by Voices?
I have no freaking, what? What are we talking about?
Well, here's the thing. Their lead singer threw a perfect game in college.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that true?
What? You don't know that Robert Pollard threw a perfect game? Perfect game or no hitter in college?
Like for his softball team?
No. All right. I'm Googling because it's small college. Robert Pollard, no hitter.
He threw a college
Wright State University.
Wow. That's
like that's crazy. That's not a small school. You know what I mean? Wow. Like that's a legit school.
Wow. All right. Mark, did you know that?
Nope, did not know that. Did not. But that is impressive. Yeah. That's great.
Anyway. How's everyone doing? Let's go talk baseball. You know, we do this once a week, so every time we get on and we kind of look at each other and we look like every week takes a month. And so we forget what happened in the middle of last week after a recording. All the waiver shenanigans happened, like all the waiver shenanigans. And we have to talk about, I know it's a little bit outdated now, but you haven't heard our thoughts. Our thoughts are what's really important here. So Andy, take it away.
Why?
Why?
So, like, covering baseball, like, we joke about how this job is fake, you know, but it's real. Like, you know, we actually work, you know, sometimes. And there is an element of doing your job where you're like, wait, what are the rules? Because, like, you know, you're trying to remember, like, okay, you know, so they put these guys on waivers. Can they pull them back? Is this release waivers? Is this irrevocable waivers? Doesn't everyone go through waivers? Wasn't there a cycle where, like, Manny Ramirez made it through waivers? And then you're thinking to yourself, that was 2007. The rules are so different than that. You got to like pull up the CBA to figure this out. I found this entire cycle, this entire whatever you want to call it, this waiver shenanigans to be very confounding, less the behavior of the Angels, but more why all these teams seemed so interested in acquiring these players. But I'm pro labor, so like I think it's great that the Guardians decided to spend $7 million very randomly when they were, you know, six games out. So yeah, like why?
You used a more colorful adjective to describe these players before the pod, before we were recording.
Talented.
Yeah, it starts with dog, rhymes with.
I didn't say that, Grant.
Wow.
That sounds like something Mark would say.
That's not. Let me remind Andy that we had a bit of a friendly wager.
We did do that.
About the waivers. Andy was like, who's going to claim these people? And I said, what's the number? And he said, 2.5. And I said, give me the over. He said, okay, you're on. So obviously the over covered, which is great. And then I took those winnings, by the way, and Colorado took care of business over the weekend, so that was great. And
we're talking college football. Or,
Duke took care of business over the weekend. That was great.
I was gonna say, if you're betting on the Rockies, like that's intervention.
No. We can't bet on baseball here. That's a no-no.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We cover the sport. No baseball betting for me. But anyway, no, I think this waiver period is just a combination of just like horrible mismanagement, the fact that they would even be in this position, the Angels, but also like clever in that, you know, the rules changed a while ago, so there aren't revocable waivers anymore. But the Angels recognized, you know, a natural deadline, which is September 1. That if you get a player on your 40 by September 1, they can be on the playoff roster. And I think timing their waiver dump to coincide with the deadline was pretty doggone clever on their part. So I think Ken Rosenthal has mentioned this a few times. You know, there's a possibility that we see this again because there is a natural deadline in place, which is playoff eligibility. So, and because there aren't trades that can happen after the trade deadline anymore, you know, you got that combination of a deadline and scarcity and just enough of like a loophole in the rules to basically move a player. So I think, yeah, we might have seen something that becomes kind of a second mini deadline of sorts. You know, it's not a trade, obviously, but it's sort of the giveaway deadline, if you will. If you're a team like the Angels, why not shed that salary? You're not going anywhere. So why not?
Like, do you think they should close that loophole?
Good question. I don't know, man. Like, I actually haven't thought of it from that aspect. I liked it. I kind of liked the idea of, you know, because it's not like it's free, right? Like, there's not a lot of maneuverability here. You're either going to take the full freight for a player or you're not. Like, that's the whole thing. So because it's kind of like simple that way, I like it. Pay the money or don't. That's it. There's no negotiation. There's none of that stuff. Pay the money or don't. So long as it stays that way, I'm cool with this. It's not a trade. It's just a straight up claim. It's just picking up the freight.
So just real quick, just to go back to something that we talked about. What if I have inside information as a writer on a baseball team? Can I bet on them? No. Okay. So what I...
Dude, Standard's going to be so pissed at us. Stop it.
What if I'm voting for an award?
Oh my God.
Can I bet on that?
Enough. Dude.
Oh, no, but seriously, I...
you're going to get me dragged into a meeting, okay? Stop.
You were already going to get dragged into a meeting.
First of all, Mark, you don't have to worry about that with me, because I don't vote, baby.
That's right. That's true. That's true.
I apologize for derailing. I think the rule just needs some tweaks. I don't mind the concept, because there used to be the August trade shenanigans where you would sneak a guy through waivers, and if he got through waivers, or someone could claim him, and it's been a part of baseball. I mean, the Marlins dumped Cody Ross in 2010 specifically because they didn't want to pay that money. They didn't want to pay him in arbitration. The Giants picked him up. He ended up having like a historic postseason for them, and so this is not that dissimilar from what's going on now. It's just a little different flavors. What I don't like is the idea that the pecking order of waiver claims allows one team to like go to the smorgasbord and be like, okay, we'll take you and you. Like, you take one back of the line. That's what so one team can't just, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny that the Guardians did that, and they're still very much the Guardians right now. But, you know, I would like that tweak, but I don't mind it as a concept.
That, I feel like, reading through the comments and then the feedback, was the one that the readers got more upset about, more than anything else, was the waiver order. That you could do what Cleveland did, which is just basically stock up, like claim them all and like whatever. Now, here's the thing, though. They still have to pay the money. If a team is willing to pay the money, like this isn't fantasy baseball. I think this is fine. I think actually the way it is just fine, because you still have to pay the money and shed the roster spots to do it. This is not like freebies. And that's what I thought was interesting, you know, about going into that day, was like, you're going to find out like, okay, who's messing around? Who's serious? Right? Because it really came down to who's going to pay the money, and also like, you know, clear a spot if you didn't have one already. I don't have a problem with it. Like, if you're a team like Cleveland that, for whatever reason, I'm a little bit shocked that they did that. In fact, I remember like not even listing them amongst the contenders when I did like a look ahead for this, just because like, it's like, why? Like, they're not very good anyway. And by the way, like the initial returns don't look great, right? With the Giolito the other day, but like, I don't know. If they're willing to pay the freight and clear the roster spot, then I have no problem with a team being able to snag as many of these people as they want.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish, though. Like, if you're trying to encourage teams that are out of it to spend to get into it, then you can maybe allow the, you know, a team like the Guardians to just scoop up four of the guys. But if you're trying to reward teams who have been, like, competing during the year, and maybe like, you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks, who like added a closer at the deadline, right? Then you would make it so that it's one pick back of the line. It just kind of depends on what, you know, what you want the rule to actually do. I will be curious to know if they close it, because there was seemed like a lot of people were just sort of miffed about the entire thing. You know, the fact that the order was determined by, you know, like the worst teams get to pick, the fact that the Guardians took everyone, like, you know, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, we will not think about this waiver wire once after next week, because the Guardians are six games back and have not been a good baseball team all year. And Lucas Giolito gave up 9 runs in his first 3 innings. And, you know, it was a very strange cycle that confused me. It really did.
I think with Giolito, what you're thinking is that the White Sox and Angels are dummies. Like, that's, you're going in there thinking those two teams couldn't work with that, you know, that clay. We, the geniuses, the Guardians, masters of pitching and developing pitching, we know how to fix this guy. So we're going to take a shot on him, and we'll have him for a month. And if we're in it, we're in it. If not, hey, you know, we've got some exclusive negotiating rights in the meantime. And if he turns his season around, you know, maybe he sees that he likes the organization. Maybe there was some next level thinking like that. And some of it was pure disrespect for the White Sox and Angels.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, that's why, you know, a bunch of teams put in claims on these guys, you know, and the relievers are fine. Like, Ronaldo Lopez and Matt Moore. Like, yeah, you'll sure.
I was going to say that that's what carries the day. Like, you know,
$700,000 for a decent reliever. Fine. Everyone can use the arms. It's more like with Mike Clevinger or something like that. You had to pay maybe like $4 million.
Yeah, because he has something. It was five.
He has a buyout. Five. Yeah. So like you have, and you're 100% buying the dip and the buyout there. Like, just, you know, what? No, it was just sort of presented as like this waiver claim period could swing the postseason race. And I was just like, I just think the Braves are going to beat the living shit out of everyone and nothing else matters. Like, you know what I mean? Like we just don't want to admit that the Braves are going to destroy everyone and there's no point in watching in October.
I feel like waivers are like maybe the most confusing thing in baseball. Because even people who know baseball well and have been around it forever are befuddled by waiver rules. They always have been. Like, I remember when I first started covering baseball, Barry Zwierluga at the Washington Post had a little like document that he passed along. And it was like all the basics of transactions in baseball. Then it got to waivers. And I was just like, what the hell is this? Like, what the hell is this? I don't understand it at all.
It's the bulk of transactions.
Oh my God. It's exactly. It's just like, and then they change the rules.
And they do that from time to time.
And it's like, oh, crap. So I think there was a lot of confusion just, and I think that made people very uncomfortable with the whole thing. And then, like, obviously, we just talked about waiver order. Some of it just isn't intuitive at all, right? Like, we're all used to the fantasy baseball world. You make a claim, you get to the back of the line. That doesn't work this way. The order used to actually be, like, by league, too, by the way. That was weird, and that's no longer the case. So I think just the whole confusion around it made it a very uncomfortable thing. And like anything that happens for the first time, you don't know whether to be like, wow, that was clever, or wow, this is bullshit.
This was the second time. That's what confused
me. No, it wasn't.
Well,
not the first.
They changed the rules last year.
No, they changed it earlier. But like, this is the first time you had a team.
Right, but what I'm saying.
No, wait a minute. This is the first time you had one team put a bunch of players on at this timing, specifically for getting rid of like a luxury tax. That's why it's new. Dude, people, they've been putting players on waivers for ages. You know, everybody knows.
But why haven't teams been doing this?
Why it's interesting. Yeah. That's why it was just like, oh, wait a minute. Like the team that mismanaged themselves into this position actually also did something smart, right? Like two things can be true at once. They're, the fact that they're so horribly mismanaged, they had to do this, is really just a you know, tells you everything you need to know about like what's been going on with that franchise for all these years.
Well, you were the one who said they were going to make the postseason.
I did not. Right? Say that. When did I say
that? I think you said that on the episode with Sam Blum.
I did.
You said,
not.
I think they're going to make the postseason.
Oh, no.
Usually I'm able to reel him in, but Sam. Saying,
yeah. I don't think I said that. But anyway, like, well, they're certainly not now.
Yeah. No, not Giolito.
But yeah, I think that was, I mean, that was my understanding of it, Andy. It was like, in fact, there was, I had someone from like, you know, one of the teams that, you know, they weren't going to get one of these guys because they were too far down the order, but they were just like, oh my god, this could be chaos.
This was the first time, as far as we know.
Correct. As far, yes, that's important. That's another important distinction. Yeah.
We don't have a public log of like who's been through waivers or not.
Correct. Yeah.
And so I am under the impression that if something, you know, seemingly, you know, whatever, efficient happens in terms of roster management, that someone had done it before. Like there's very little innovation in that. And so my thought was like, well, didn't the team, like you're telling me like the Marlins didn't do this last year or like some other team that was out of it, you know, but maybe not, maybe not. And I guess we've also like commodified the coverage of the sport to such an extent that there's like an off-season preview and a trade deadline preview and like who are the 10 players who are going to get moved, you know, by the deadline. Like it would be great if we just started doing like who are the 10 players who these bad teams are going to give up on and try and give away. Like that would be a really great way to juice up, you know, reader interest heading into, you know, August 28th. What do you think?
The heck yeah. More transactions. More transactions. More, they like, they get the clicks. They get the
just
subs.
Going up to your GM being like, you're out of it. This player kind of stinks. Are you going to try and get out of $500,000? You're holding up your mic. Like, what?
Yeah, I'm for it. I'm for it just I'm for trades the day before the World Series starts. Like you got like Braves, Orioles, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, like that's Ohtani coming through the door. Oh my gosh. Like he's on the Orioles now. He's DHing and hitting fourth. I'm for that.
The Orioles just like picked up Jorge Lopez, by the way. They just like claimed him through some sort of waivers. He's not going to be in the postseason mix, but somehow he's on the team. Like, I don't know how that was just
but
like,
that,
what?
That one's actually never changed. You've always been able to get guys off waivers okay. after September 1. You can literally do, right. like, you could do it like that up until the end of the season, actually. But what would the point be if you can't make the playoffs anyway? And like, you know, teams looking for fill holes or whatever.
Aren't there a bunch of loopholes that can get Lopez into the playoffs? Like this guy gets hurt, but or is he just
no,
like,
he's
out?
Ineligible.
Ineligible, yeah. Just flat out.
Yeah. Okay. You can't, not for that team. You have to be under team control, I think, the first.
Got it.
I just want to make a point about the Lopez thing. Because, like, when a team like the Orioles last year, right, trades their closer when they're, like, in postseason contention, right, I think our natural reaction at this point, after being so anti-tanking pilled or whatever, right, to be like, that is outrageous. Like, they're giving up on this season. You're aware of one of the players they got back in that trade. It's Yennier Cano, who's like an incredibly high leverage reliever who's been really good for them. How do you balance, like, you don't want to basically just throw up your hands and be like, well, the executives are always right. But like, you know, like, well, you know, they looked at their odds and yeah, they were right to give up versus like, you know what I mean? Like they did the opposite of what, in a lot of ways, of what the Angels did this year. And I think all of us on this program, you know, we're kind of just like, you got Ohtani, you got to go for it, you know. But obviously, right, they should have traded Shohei Ohtani a year and a half ago. So I'm just wondering, like, do you guys think, like, how do you manage those sort of obviously conflicting thoughts without, like, just giving into sort of executive think?
This is going to go back to like the rec sport baseball era where you could just, closers were fungible back then. Like just incredibly, one closer is less, you know, not that much more likely to save a game than your backup closer. And relievers are fungible. And so I'm kind of coming back to that because the Mariners traded Paul Sewald and they're not better for it, but it didn't really hurt them that much. Everyone moved up a little bit, and you've got now your seventh inning guys, your eighth inning guy, your sixth inning guys, your seventh inning guy, and it hasn't really affected them that much. I say if you can get a heck of a return for a high leverage reliever and you're comfortable that you have other guys who can fill that high leverage role, go for it. I don't think that's tanking. I don't even think it's tanking adjacent. I think it's just sort of realizing the fungibility of relievers.
Well, how do you square that, though, with what happened in Milwaukee last year? Where they traded Hader and everything kind of went kaput.
Went kerflooey. Yeah. I mean
Hader's a bit of a different guy than some of these other guys, but it's the same general concept.
There were reasons to think that Hader was busted last year. I mean, like, you know, he had blown some pretty important saves. He did not look right. And I think that was a bet against him, and it didn't work out. But he also didn't exactly light the world up for the Padres when he joined them. I think he righted the ship in September, but he was pretty bad for the Padres at first, too.
I actually think that's also a case of bias in a way. He's exactly the type of pitcher that as soon as it starts to not be perfect, you're like, oh, here it comes. Here it comes, right? Like, he's everything. Like, that violent motion, throws hard, blah, blah. Like, he's a, you know. And I don't know how true any of that stuff is, but certainly that might be a case where that kind of bias crept in a little bit, to Grant's point.
Yeah, I think the bigger disappointment there was that Taylor Rogers, I don't think, did so hot for the Brewers. That was the bigger surprise, I think, in that trade. But yeah, Hader had an ERA, 7.31 in 16 innings. He was bad.
I'm more interested, though, in what happened in Milwaukee subsequently, in which, like, the clubhouse was pretty irritated. You know what I mean? Like, the team itself was pretty – not – sorry, when I meant, you know, went kaput, I meant the Brewers, not Hader specifically. Because, like, that was – like, they traded their closer, right? And the team was pissed because he's, like, kind of, you know, had been in some seasons their actual best player. You know, like, whereas the Mariners traded Paul Sewald, who's a good pitcher, not – Josh Hader, you know, but a good pitcher. And the team was just like, all right, we're just going to, you know, go into first place now.
They kind of did that last year with Kendall Graveman, too.
Yes, like, but that when they traded Kendall Graveman, was there problem. Was a lot of people pretty frustrated, exactly. Though, too. So, like, then they went on a run.
Like, and then that's how they ended up making the wild card. So, the lesson is tick your team off.
Yeah, upset your team and trade your closer. Trade your closer today. Put him on waivers.
Put him on waivers right now. The closer example is so funny because, you know, for years and years and years, that's one of those places, you know, closers, like saves, all that, where folks who saw the game a little bit differently saw inefficiency, right? Like, that's the very first place you look. Just because someone's racking up a bunch of saves doesn't necessarily mean they're that valuable. But then at the same time, these are the people that are, you know, getting traded at the deadline when you're seeking out good players. So this is one of those cases where you're seeing both ends of that pull. Like, there are people who are acknowledging, you know what, this isn't the end-all be-all. And also on the other side of the spectrum going, man, that's the last piece. I need that guy.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's kind of funny to me, right? Like, it's both at once. And you know, maybe that's the fun part of this, is that you don't have to be in one camp all the time exclusively. Right? You can flip back and forth. You can be the team that traded your closer away and then be there a year later and be the team trading for a closer because you're like, oh man, we need this to lengthen out our boat. Like, this is a big piece for us. The room needs to see this. So, and they're all true, by the way. Like, can you make an argument that it's like an inefficient way that we use pitch? Yes, absolutely. And we all know the numbers behind it. Absolutely. Do you really want to go pissing off your clubhouse every year trading that guy away? No, you don't. No, and sometimes you want the opposite, where you're bringing a guy in. All right? So they're all true. And I think it's funny to watch these teams vacillate between those places.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
It's wild to see the Mariners go on runs two straight years after trading their closer and ticking the clubhouse off. But yeah, I mean, it's you can see with the Royals signing Aroldis Chapman and saying, you know, well, if we can fix this guy, we can get something for him. And then they're right. And the Rangers are like, well, we need that guy. And so it's almost like
they got him early, too, by the way.
They got him super early. So it's always interesting to see. It's almost like the bad teams are farm systems for high leverage relievers in a weird way. The good teams, the contending teams, are just going to let them all the high leverage, but also
super variable relievers like Chapman. Let the bad team sign him, and then we'll pay that prospect premium if you can fix him and get him right. That's a funny dynamic.
Yeah, Chapman has been Chapmaning to an extreme degree lately for the Rangers, who are you know, clawing for purchase. And
hasn't their bullpen in general sort of been that way of late?
Yeah, I mean, they're a good team that, you know, has some flaws that they can really hit. They have some good starting pitching, but yeah, the bullpen is bullpen's taken on water lately. I don't know. We were going to talk a little bit about the kind of what we're looking forward to in September. I've talked before about the AL West. Mm-hmm. I think it's,
yeah, let's go
in
for
part,
it.
In part because, you know, the Texas and Houston play in the central time zone, so I can actually watch them. I'm looking forward to, you know, I caught most of the game last night. It fell apart midway through and stopped being interesting. But, you know, Scherzer, Verlander on Wednesday, like, that'll be really fun. I think those guys played together before, maybe on like a Team USA showcase circuit. I can't really remember. But yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to that with the Mariners, as, you know, taking on Team of Destiny vibes. If by Team of Destiny you mean starting rotation that never walks anyone. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I watched the Braves play the Dodgers this weekend, and I'm sort of just like, yeah, just let's just fast forward.
Aren't those teams freaking good? Holy
yeah,
crap,
but they are, and the Dodgers, obviously, you know, the situation with Julio Urias sucks in a variety of ways, specifically for the people involved. But yeah, they're going to be scrambling to figure out their rotation.
That was, speaking of that, that's the thing I'm looking forward to. Yo, Bobby Miller was very impressive.
Bobby Ice.
Holy
as the,
crap.
As David Vesey,
like,
calls him.
I mean, you know, like, you know, the scouting reports, the guy had good stuff, whatever. Then you watch him against a lineup like that in that spot. I was just like, oh my, like, this is going to be a factor. This guy is going to be a factor in the postseason. Now, you know, how long are they going to let him throw in games? God only knows, you know, like, it's four innings and out. I don't know. But like, you figure one way or another, I think, especially now, you know, the part of the Urias being, I mean, it's a terrible situation. Obviously there's also, you know, secondarily roster, you know, ramifications with that too. And like, you, someone's got to throw the innings. And so maybe it's this guy, like it and why not? Like, that kind of stuff, high end stuff against, and he's, you know, getting tested, he's getting better. I think this is the first time he's thrown seven innings in a start since coming up. I don't know. I thought it was super impressive and something I'm looking forward to seeing play out.
You know who just threw two scoreless innings in Oklahoma City? That would be Walker Buehler. Mm. Buehler might be coming back.
Yeah. Buehler, obviously, and a very talented pitcher, one of the best postseason performers in recent memory. How much he can give them is going to be a challenge. I think they're trying to stretch him out to about five innings. And then, you know, coming off second TJ stretch to five innings, hey, postseason baseball.
Yeah.
That is a tough. That's tough. That's tough for anyone. Buehler is, you know, as the kids say, built different. He, you know, is an exceedingly talented, confident young man, but that's just really hard. He's come back pretty quickly from TJ, you know, we shall see.
He's got tight pants too.
He's got tight pants. Bobby Miller has tight pants too.
Does
that's
he?
What the kids are doing these days. Yeah,
I didn't
Bobby Miller's got
that.
Tight pants. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
a tall drink of water. He's taller than I
he's
thought.
A,
6'4".
He's impressed some people with his fits.
I heard Jordan guy. Yeah. Big Jordan guy apparently.
You'd have to really dream on it in a variety of ways, but with the Dodgers, you could do a lot worse than Clayton Kershaw, Bobby Miller, Lance Lynn, and Walker Buehler as a rotation. But there's, you know, with Kershaw, there's the health stuff. With Miller, there's the inexperience. With Buehler, there's the health stuff. And Lance Lynn, like, he's Lance Lynn. You can't ever forget that he is Lance Lynn, but he does give up a lot
of dingers.
He does give up some dingers.
He does give up a lot of dingers, and the barbs were teeing off on him the other night in a way that you just, you know, because Lance Lynn has been pretty good since coming over to the Dodgers. He's, you know, they, no shock here, they fiddled with the knobs on his, you know, his pitch mix, and he was better than he was on the White Sox. But the Braves have a way of, that lineup does not quit, and they're going to be very, very difficult to deal with.
Miller was shoving in his start, and then Matt Olson catches like maybe a V word, the only mistake he made all night, and bang, I don't think it's landed yet. Like, that's the Braves.
And also, you got to remember too, the Braves had won three in a row, day game getaway day. It's the biggest game of Bobby Miller's life. He was clearly up for it. I'm not trying to take anything away from it, but like day game getaway day is going to be a little different than, you know, game three at Dodger Stadium. If those two teams meet, and look, the Philadelphia Phillies are going to have something to say about all this. You know, the Milwaukee Brewers might, like, we can't just pencil in, you know, Braves Dodgers, but yeah, that would be a fun NLCS.
It would. And the thing that's with the Braves, so okay, it's a goofy lineup. We all know that. Every single member of the lineup has an adjusted OPS over 100, which is absurd. But to me, what's setting them apart now is that you've got Max Fried back, and he looks like Max Fried. You know, there was that question of, well, you know, how's he going to be? He looks outstanding. And now you're talking Spencer Strider, Max Fried, Charlie Morton. I mean, they're absurd. They're one of the, I think that the Dodgers teams from the last 10 years, I'm not sure which one was the best team I've ever seen in my life, but one of them was. You know, if I go back, I'm sure one of them's the best team I've ever seen in my life.
It's probably either 17 or 20, but anyway.
Yeah, but I don't want to get hyperbolic, but it's kind of making me rethink, like, is this the best team I've ever seen? And I don't know. It's just a really, really good team. And, you know, I've seen the 98 Yankees or whatever, but I don't want to get too hyperbolic, but man, the Braves are good. Just stupid good.
They remind me of the 2018 Red Sox in that whole year, right? You know, they won like 108 games, but they were the sort of team, if you watch from afar, you're like, I don't know about that bullpen. Like the bullpen, like they're going to play close games in October. Like, you really trust Craig Kimbrell? Like, what, you know, how are they going to get through that? And then they won every game 7-3 in the postseason. Because they just, and then, you know, Kimbrell actually like got through stuff, and they used their starters, and, you know, like, there's just, when you have a lineup that ferocious, like, you can deal with, hey, we're not totally sure who's going to handle the sixth in the, you know, the second game. Like, you can also come back if your bullpen blows it. Like, they're going to be a very tough out.
When I covered the 2016 Giants, they had a terrible, terrible bullpen, especially in the second half of the season. But what really struck me was that the offense just wasn't getting giving them a lot of help. And so you'd have every game was 3-2. And then, oh, it's 4-3 and the bullpen's to blame. What about the three runs? What would have happened if you had five or six like a normal team? So, yeah, if you can just outscore teams, it papers over a ton of bullpen issues.
They get scarier as we get closer. The Braves do. We knew they were good. I mean, gosh darn it. You're right, dude. Like, they do some things that help paper over whatever they're like, wherever they might be short. Like, they've got an answer for it. So, that, yeah, those are the toughest outs. That's a scary, scary team.
Seven guys with 20 home runs or more. Ronald Acuna Jr., who's like gonna go for, you know, like 40-80 or something this year, you know.
Incredible.
And yeah, like, who wants to face Spencer Strider in game one? Or who wants to face Max Fried in game one? Or if Kyle Wright is able to make it back, you know, that's a perfectly fine, you know, they're good, man. This is a good club.
Like, look what you just named right there. Like, so I looks in the postseason, I think, are important. How different does it get? Right? Strider, Fried, come on. Right? Like, you know, and then you look at like their guys in their lineup too, by the way. You know, this power is there, but like the strikeouts aren't, dude, they're a machine, man. They really are. And I think what we're looking at with the Atlanta Braves is, are they going to cement their legacy, win the thing? Because if they do that, then the conversations about this club are like, wow, this is one of the best teams I've ever seen. You know, like I think it starts to go to that level of like, wow, they were special. Incredible. So, you know, they got to win it all, obviously, but pretty decent bet, man, all things equal. I mean, that's, I don't know. Like I said, I think they get scarier as we get closer.
I just checked because when he said seven guys who hit 20 home runs, that's absurd. I went to see if the Guardians had one. They do. Jose Ramirez has 21 home runs. The Giants have one. They have Wilmer Flores with 20 on the nose.
Will Flowers. Attaboy.
And the Braves have seven. Seven guys with 20 home runs. That is ridiculous.
Grant, do you think the Giants will make the wild card?
I think they might be relegated at this point. I think might be in the PCL next.
Oh, no.
They are playing some of the dullest baseball. Like, I had Bags has COVID, and he wasn't able to make the trip to Chicago because of the darn COVID. So I was doing my thing. I'm not a beat writer, but I'm doing my thing where it's like opinion-y recap-y, where I'm trying to thread that needle. Yesterday, I just kind of put the Giants on blast because they're terrible. Like, they look bad. They can't hit. They can't hit. And you've got Logan Webb. He goes out there and he's giving you good innings. And they've got arms up and down that are solid arms preventing runs. They cannot hit. They hit the ball weak. They hit the ball soft. And they also strike out a ton. Like, if you're going to strike out a ton, hit the snot out of the ball. Like, that's what the Mariners do. They strike out a ton, but they hit the snot out of the ball. If you're going to strike out and you're hitting these little piddly duck snorts, I don't know. What were you going to say, Andy?
No, just your guy Logan Webb cannot collect a victory. That is crazy.
He is. He's got the not just the lowest run support in the league, but like by a half run over second place.
Man, he should try pitching better.
Oh my God! Exactly. Here it is. Here it is. Holy crap! Hey, I looked. I thought of you because I was like, "Hey, we got."
That's crazy.
The league leader is 16 like, wins. Man. So I was like, "Hey, how many times have we had a season without a 20 game winner?" It's happened a couple times in the last decade. It's more than I would have thought. But anyway, I thought of you. Like, they could just pitch better. You know what I'm saying?
Just pitch better, Webby. Come on.
Wow. Spencer Strider, 16 wins. We were just talking about how good he is. Wow.
Oh, my. Yeah. Oh, let's talk about run support. Spencer Strider. Which
Justin Steele,
for?
This guy who might win the Cy Young, who I definitely heard of before last week. He might.
Did he not shove last night or the day before?
I guess he was good. Yeah. I don't know.
It doesn't count. Giants.
This is going to be a weird year for trying to decide the NL Cy Young. I wish the voters the best of luck.
Can I talk to you about wins real quick? Kyle Harrison, right, in Sacramento, made 20 starts for the Sacramento River Cats. How many wins do you think he got in those 20 starts?
Dude, the minor leagues are about development. I do not care at all.
All right, one.
I mean, I just don't know. Like, you're not going to win this argument because I'm not going to take part because the minor leagues are about development.
Okay, here we go. Nick Avila, he is a reliever on the River Cats. He pitches for that team. He has thrown 62 innings, appeared in 49 games. What is his record?
I have no idea.
14-0. What does that tell you about Nick Avila?
The Giants should call his ass out. Maybe it would help the team.
Nothing.
You got a guy with a 14-0 record. You're like, oh, they're so bad. I can't watch this team. You've got Tom Seaver down on the farm, and you're like, nah. We're good.
He's like walking five guys per nine because it's the PCL, and he's got a
14. Wait, does he really? He's 14-0 as a reliever. That's
hilarious.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
That's awesome.
It's so funny. It's so funny.
Yeah, that's got to be like some sort of record. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah,
good for that kid.
I'm trying to think of all the starters. Like, you've got
14-0. He has a chance at 20 wins.
Dude, someone should make a note of that. Well, no, their season's about to end, isn't it?
Yeah. So is he 12?
They
13,
gotta find
14.
A way.
The Giants.
They should have just pitched a little bit better.
The Giants have seven guys with 10 starts or more, and they've combined for 14 wins. My man Nick Avila, always
Avila.
A hot topic here on the podcast.
Friend of the pod.
You need to show up and show these boys how to win.
You guys got anything else you're excited about in September?
Well, Nick Avila's chase for 20.
Nick
obviously.
Avila, yeah, Nick Avila. Yeah, that's
the chase, baby. The chase.
Yeah. Nick Avila, let's go.
Put his ass on
end
waivers.
Of the pod.
You know, get him in a pennant race. Man. Let's go.
I will say, as long as I'm ranting, I'm not excited about these third wild card races. Like, we're talking about the Giants are still in postseason position. They're terrible. They're impossible to watch. Why would I be invested in, well, if this team can make it, anything can happen. And the Phillies last year, no, this team sucks. Lots of these teams suck.
Wow.
I mean, I think there were, as we all know, there were lots of Phillies fans who said that about their team last year, too.
100%.
So,
100%. No, I'm just teasing.
You know, like, yeah, it is a weird, it is a, the third wild card I've, you know, been against it the whole time, but who can, no one cares what my opinion is. But like, the problem is that you are incentivized to keep caring about a team that is just not particularly aesthetically pleasing in a lot of ways, which, you know, again, tricks you into continuing to watch, and we all stay employed. And so I guess it's good. You know, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Manfred. We apologize for all our pro labor takes, but I don't know. Like, these teams are just so flawed. The West is different. The West, those teams are good. The East, not the East, sorry. The American League, those teams are good. The National League, they're two games over 500. I mean, it's just a kind of big difference.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing these teams leapfrog over each other, like the Reds and the Marlins and the Giants. None of these teams are especially compelling. The Reds are fine in their own way. The Marlins are fine in their own way. The Giants, it wasn't that long ago, they had like the third best record in the National League, so that they at least can fake it for a little bit. But I don't want, like, I just scoreboard watching and trying to figure out what the Reds and Diamondbacks are doing sucks. It's boring.
The Reds would be a nice story if, because, you know, they haven't had a postseason team, well, besides 2020, but they haven't had a postseason team with fans in the building quite some time. So if they're able to make it to the DS, it would probably be a pretty good environment, you know, in Cincinnati. The D-backs, you know, have Corbin Carroll or whatever. You can get kind of excited about some of their players. Zach Gallen is fun to watch. You know, the Giants, they're a tough hang. They are. I mean, there's no way around it. Like, they are a competent, tough hang. And then the Marlins, like, if they make the playoffs, they're going to roll out four guys you probably haven't heard of with a sub-3 ERA, you know. There's a guy named Braxton who's pitching well.
Braxton Garrett?
It's his first name. You know, so, yeah. In the West, like, I keep saying the West. No, not Tony Braxton. In the American League, like, you can look at the Rangers and be like, I could see how this team could win the World Series. I can't really say that about, like, the Marlins or the Reds or the Giants.
But we couldn't say that about the Phillies, and that's the argument. But at the same time, they're magic
about the Phillies. Yeah. The Phillies have Bryce Harper.
You could.
Phillies
have Bryce Harper. That was always the scary thing about it. So the obvious flaws were there, but also they hit the ball out of the park a lot. Right? Like, we said that about them all year long last year. Is that, like, so long as they have a puncher's chance, and it worked out for them. Now, is that sustainable? I don't know. Yet here they are again, by the way. So anyway, like, we did say that about them. I think, yeah, I mean, to Andy's point, like, I think that's a great synopsis of the difference in the leagues. You can squint with the American League side, right? Yeah, you can see those Western, yeah, West. Any one of them, you could make an argument for, oh, okay, you can see that. National League side, it's a lot harder to do. A lot harder to do.
Yeah, just tough. Tough to really envision whoever plays for the Reds besides Ellie De La Cruz, you know, like in
there. Should rephrase it. Like, I'm sure you could squint hard enough to see it, but, like, you wouldn't want to. Like, there's, right? Like, there's almost a, God dang it, they're really not that good. Like, this isn't fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a drag. Like, even if it's an underdog story, like, if a team legitimately sucks, but it's a weird baseball and they got hot at the right time, I don't know if I like that. Okay, I don't know if I'm getting behind that necessarily, if I'm, like, truly convinced like that. Like, it'd be like if Cleveland somehow snuck in through the side door, I'd be pissed about it. I'd just be like, I hope they get swept, all right? They suck. Like, I don't think they're very good. Like, they shouldn't be here.
I think from a viewing perspective, you know, from a neutral viewing perspective, right, you should root for your team. But if you're not rooting for your team, if you're like us and you're just rooting for what's the most compelling, like, you just always want to see the super teams play. Give me the 2019 ALCS, you know, Astros, Yankees. Give me the 2017 World Series. Give me the 2021 NLDS with the Giants and the Dodgers. I want to see the best teams bang heads. Like, that's, you know, Braves, Dodgers this year. And whether, you know, I would love to see the Orioles and the Rays in a 7-game series. Like,
the one notable historical anomaly that I think goes counter to that was Indians, now the Guardians, Cubs in 2016. Like, that, those weren't the super teams, but that had a hook. And that was cool as heck in its own way.
Well, the Cubs were a super team, and they were a budding super team. It didn't work out, but, like, and they had the droughts. So if you could get, like, Mariners, I don't know who's the even equivalent of the
Brewers.
Yeah. What if the Brewers played in Chicago and were called the Cubs? Maybe that would work. Like, the Cubs in the World Series. I mean, the Cubs have sort of gone post-hype to such an extent that, like, they're back to being the enjoyable Cubs again, you know, rather than, like, the team that invented baseball.
I said Mariners, Brewers, and, like, 2,000 miles away, a Fox executive just went, ooh, and God. Shuddered and like he's sweating and not sure why.
Yeah, people who care about page views at The Athletic had the same thought.
Yeah, I was going to say, all the people, I wasn't feeling the so hot there, call, Grant. Just
the bosses who are going to call Kerrigan to the carpet for his for your gambling on the NL West race are going to be talking to him about the same
thing. Yeah, thanks for nothing, well, Grant. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, so like seriously though, what if a reliever – confides to you that he's feeling worse than he's letting on.
For the
on.
Love of God, let's it, not. Please stop it. Please stop it. Mark Kerrig does not approve of this message. Just so everybody knows.
I don't even bet. I buy one lotto ticket a week and I think about the things I'm going to buy. That's,
do you
that's
really?
My gambling. Yeah.
That's cute.
It's worth a dollar.
My wife and I do that sometimes. We'll buy a Powerball ticket and just start budgeting what we're going to spend things on. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
it's
great.
It's like a $2. It's like, you know, the price of a candy bar. And I just sit there and go, ah, I'm going to buy this and buy that.
Producer Brian chimes in to say that Grant has been betting on the Rivercats when Nick Avila is in there.
Oh, that's good. That's a good place to end.
If you happen to know Nick Avila or are Nick Avila and are listening, come on the pod. We want to talk to you about what this year
is
like.
Get him on
like.
The pod.
I'll do some damn reporting,
for Christ's sake. Get him on the pod.
Man, wow. You can't make me report. I'm a columnist.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
I'm a columnist.
Is this a challenge? Now get him on the pod, Grant. God. This guy's going to be 17-0 by the next time we record. Like, we should be talking about this.
He was on the White Sox earlier this year as a Rule 5 pick. So the White Sox gave up this guy who's like a magic win pitcher.
Well, now you see why Rick Hahn and Ken Williams lost their jobs.
They're looking at Nick Avila. All right, this has been episode 64 of the Roundtable. We would like to thank you for listening to us. We'll be back next week talking about baseball because that's what we do. See you then.
I was very wrong.